Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and you're listening to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that means something to them and mark moments in their life. From maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest this week is Tokyo Paralympic javelin gold medalist Dan Pembroke. Hello, Dan, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello. Lovely to be here.
So how did you find it, Dan, selecting your tracks then? How was it for you?
I think it was a great experience, really. It kind of actually made me take mental note as to what songs were important and, yeah, brought back quite a few nice memories, actually. Yeah, made me categorise all my life.
Well, your first track takes you back to the age of 6 and sitting on the sofa with your dad and strumming along, or drumming along, I must say, to a Gary Moore track on the harmonica. What was early life like for you? Was it a sort of musical home that you grew up with, and did music immediately come to you, and did you immediately pick up music as a young child?
Well, my dad had always been into music. He loves all sorts of music. And he used to be in a band at school. So he's always played guitar. And so, you know, as a young lad, I would listen to my dad playing electric guitar upstairs with my mum sometimes shouting, "Keep it down." So I'd be up there. It would be the rebel thing to do. You know, me and my dad sitting there jamming away on guitars. And at the time, you know, he was teaching me bits and pieces. But it was one evening when my mum had gone out and it was just me and my dad, and we were downstairs and we had all the big hi-fi system downstairs. And my dad said, "Yeah, Dan, listen to this song." So there's 6-year-old Dan just sitting there on the sofa, and it was Gary Moore and Still Got the Blues for You. And it was the first time I kind of sat down and been quiet, you know. And at the time I was messing around with a harmonica. Yeah, I just sat there and started jamming out, and my dad was astounded by my concentration to the song and how emotive I was when playing the harmonica.
And you say this track was one of the tracks that you really felt the power of music from. What do you sort of mean by the sort of feeling the power of music?
Well, I think this song is almost like liquid emotion. It's like, it's a pure, I don't know, it's one of those songs. Well, for me, I guess music is different for everybody, but for me, it was like just total emotion. You know, some songs can be, you know, a little bit, I don't know, bitty, you know, then they're like not connected to the lyrics that they're saying, but every sort of word, that every lyric that Gary Moore was singing, the music was totally backing that up 100%. And it got to me as a 6-year-old kid.
Still Got the Blues there by Gary Moore, and a track that really, I think, got you into music at an early age, Dan. For your next track, we are moving on maybe just 1 year, and this time to the age of 7. And I think a track that takes you back to little trips with your dad and adventures and going fishing with him and stuff and things like that. What little adventures did you go on, and what were those fishing trips like for you at the age of 7?
Well, they were like the biggest adventure of my summer holidays. You know, in the summer, my dad used to have a boat on the River Thames. This boat was kitted out like no other boat. It was a definite fishing boat, all camouflage over the side. It looked like something out of Action Man. So sometimes, yeah, we'd go on the boat for about a week, just fishing. And it was like, yeah, just like a big adventure, something I'd been looking forward to for a long time. And we would often play Bon Jovi, and one of the tracks that stood out for me was Someday I'll Be Saturday Night. This song really gives me those memories of going on adventures with my dad, and we used to sing this song at the top of our lungs.
Bon Jovi there with Someday I'll Be Saturday Night and little trips and adventures for you with your dad fishing. Now, we come to a track, this time another rock track, that takes you to teenage life and nights out with your best friend Joe. Where were you living at this time? And could you describe, if you can, without giving too much away, what a night out was like for you and Joe?
I lived over West London, just outside West London, in a place called Iver. That's where I grew up. My best mate, Joe, also lived in Iver. So we were as thick as thieves when we were young. And yeah, we grew up together. I've known Joe since I was like 4 years old. And yeah, in our teenage years, we used to go out to like rock pubs and things like that in Uxbridge. Crown and Treaty was the place to go back then. And yeah, it's full of rock music. So yeah, we would have a few pre-drinks before we go out and yeah, be blasting this one out in the car or in the taxi.
And was it sort of a carefree life for you as a teenager back then? Did you feel, you know, sort of life was in front of you and that, you know, sort of life was at your feet, I suppose, in a way?
I wouldn't say too much, no. I mean, when I was in school, I was bullied a little bit because, one, I was fat, I was ginger, I had glasses. And so I used to get bullied quite a bit. And also because of my eyesight, I often would have a close-knit group of friends that understood my eyes and, you know, were very good about it. But sometimes it used to kind of hold me back a little bit, my eyesight. So, yeah, and it took me a while to kind of accept that my eyes were getting worse.
And what is the track that you and Joe used to sing out loud when you were getting ready for your big nights out?
Well, there's quite a few songs, but one that sticks out for me is Scarred by Papa Roach. Definitely, it's one you can belt out to the top of your lungs.
I tear my heart open, I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real.
Scars there by Papa Roach and Nights Out with your friend Joe there, Dan, too. We now come to a track, Dan, that marks the time of the London 2012 Olympic Games. And sadly for you, due to an elbow injury, you were unable to compete at London 2012. That must have been quite a sort of a hard time and a bit of a knock for you at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely was. I'd been training since I was a young lad for the javelin, and I came very, very far, and I broke many UK age records whilst I was growing up, and, you know, it kept me on track, and I was, as far as I was aware, I was going to be a professional athlete. You know, that was going to be my job, and, yeah, unfortunately, just before the Olympic Games in 2012, I snapped my medial collateral ligament, which, you know, really upset things. And yeah, from that moment on, I was a bit kind of dumbfounded of what I was going to do next, really, or if I was going to, you know, carry on with athletics. I really wasn't sure.
And you were competing, you know, in sighted athletics as well as at the time, you know, so it wasn't Paralympics.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so obviously, I was diagnosed when I was 6 years old with retinitis pigmentosa. But with the condition, it only really affects you probably in your late teens. So at this time of 2012, I was just 20 years old. And so I was noticing changes then into my vision, and night, you know, seeing at night was a lot more difficult. And my peripheral vision was closing in quite fast. I've always been told from a young age of my diagnosis, my parents told me that, you know, Dan, you might go blind by the time you're in your mid-20s, which, for, you know, for a young kid to hear is probably, you would think, would be quite daunting. But because I got used to the idea, I kind of knew it was coming. And, you know, when I reached sort of the end of my teens, and at this point, I was still, you know, I got very good eyesight during the day and everything. It was fine. But I did realize I didn't, you know, I didn't have much time left to, of good eyesight. And I was noticing differences, you know, then, and they were coming quite fast. So, yeah, I mean, after doing my injury in 2013, I had an operation on my elbow to reconnect my ligament, because that's the injury. I totally ruptured my ligament in my elbow. So I had that refused. And then afterwards, I was noticing that the recovery was so slow and I didn't have much time left. As far as the doctors were telling me, you know, with my good usable eyesight. And so I've really just wanted to go traveling. I really wanted to see the world whilst I had good eyesight. So I made a very tough decision at that point, yeah, to go away and go and fulfill my other dreams. And this song we're about to announce is from the soundtrack of Into the Wild, directed by Sean Penn. There's a film. And that film really left its impression on me about kind of escaping and seeing the wilderness around me and, yeah, kind of escaping. I don't know. The film was about escaping society, but for me it was kind of escaping the confines of regimental training, you know, in a professional career. I'd not had a chance to kind of spread my wings and fly away and see the things I wanted to see.
And when you hear your next track, what sort of pictures come back to you of your time travelling?
Well, this song is sort of makes me feel about the start of the journey. So actually having that mindset and going, right, well, I'm about to start my adventure. And for me, this song really is that. It's the kind of like, right, I'm doing it. Let's go.
And Canned Heat there, and going up the country, and a track that I think inspired you to get on and do your travelling. We now come to a track that takes you back to finding the place where you wanted to go travelling, which was Sardinia. But I wanted to find out how you actually decided on going to Sardinia. What was the process? Was it something quite easy or quite simple?
Well, for me, like once I seen that film Into the Wild, for me I knew that I had to go out and I had to go and see something, you know, I had to go and do something. And because of my diagnosis with RP, I knew I didn't have much time, so I think the RP acted like a catalyst to get me moving, as well as that film. And immediately I kind of like got a map out of Europe and I closed my eyes and pushed my finger onto the map. It sounds like something out of a film. I guess my journey's been inspired by a film, so why not, right? And I pushed my finger on the map and opened my eyes, and my finger was like in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea, and the nearest landmass was Sardinia. And I said, right, I'm going to go there. I looked at some flights, and before I knew it, I was going to Sardinia, and I packed a backpack with... Yeah, like I said before, I'm really into fishing. So I packed a fishing rod, my spear gun, and just the bare essentials into a rucksack, and I was off.
And what were those sort of first weeks like for you in Sardinia? Could you describe what they were like? You know, did you have to sort of survive on your own, go out and catch your meals and stuff and things like that? Was it sort of, you know, sort of being out in the wild and fending for yourself?
Was I kind of landed in a town called Olbia, and got there and kind of wasn't what I was looking for. I was looking for something quite wild, you know, and having the sea around me and things. I remember going into this bar, and I was asked somebody at the bar, I said, you know, I really want to go somewhere where it's really wild. And they just said, right, outside is a bus stop. It's going to a place called Calicanone. And it was about a two-hour bus journey, And it was already, you know, quite late in the afternoon at this point. And I got on this bus and the sun started going down. And as you know, with people with RP, they can't see very well in the dark. So I was starting to panic and I was going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I didn't even know where I was. And nobody spoke English. The bus driver didn't speak English. So I couldn't, like, say anything. So I was starting to panic. And then I just had this feeling of, like, this is what you wanted. This is what you wanted. Like, push yourself into the unknown. And then I just kind of relaxed and said, right, okay, I'm going to get off where I think I need to get off. And I just got off and I had this little torch with me and just followed down this road. And then I just came to the harbour front and there was a hotel there. And I just went into the hotel and, yeah, I got out the next day and I found a place that rented kayaks. And I thought, right, that's my go-to. And this town that I went to, Calagonone, is situated in the middle of like a nature reserve. So you've got like 15 miles of coastline, which hasn't got any buildings on it. And it's just full of like mountains, caves right on the shorefront, beautiful, pristine beaches, crystal clear ocean. And I said, right, I'm just going to go out there. And it was the first time when I felt, wow, I'm having a proper adventure. And yeah, I was catching fish on my kayak out to sea, catching these little tuna, coming back into the beaches and sleeping in caves and making my own little fire and cooking my tuna up on the fire. It was proper caveman style. It was exactly what I wanted.
And what is the track that takes you back to those wonderful days of freedom out in Sardinia on your own, cooking like a caveman in some ways, maybe?
Yeah, well, I would say it's Queen of California by John Mayer. And this one, it's sort of like, there's a lyric that says, boarded the flight with my earphones on. And that's exactly what I'd done when I was there with Sardinia, and I was listening to this song. So, yeah, it's a song that reminds me of going to Sardinia for the first time.
Queen of California there, and memories of your first trip out to Sardinia. We now come to a track, Dan, that marks a time when you decided to go back to Sardinia and you met up with a local lady and asked her out for coffee, and I think you're still together. What made you...
We are, yep.
What made you want to move out to Sardinia in 2015, and where did you both end up travelling to? Because I think you went travelling as well.
Yeah. Well, I think I moved out in 2015 to Sardinia for a long term. You know, it's like a whole tourist season, and I decided to move out there with the intention to be a freestyle massage therapist and personal trainer for the tourists. I was out there early season, and I'd go to the supermarket like everybody does to get their food, and it's a very small town. So I went into this supermarket and I clocked eyes with this woman that works in the supermarket. And I was captivated from the word go. And, you know, I just gave her a smile. She smiled back at me. And this was happening for about a week or 2 weeks. I plucked up the courage to get into the queue of the supermarket. And I spoke to her and I said, do you speak English? And immediately she said no. And so I was like, ah, okay. And then next week I went in the line again and said, do you speak English? And she said, yeah, a little bit. Why? And I was like, oh, just wanted to speak to you. And eventually I parked up the courage to ask her out for coffee, and the rest was history. So, yeah, it was a very, very nice time.
And as I say, I know you ended up both travelling out to New Zealand and renting a camper van and really enjoying yourself out there as well. And I suppose probably having the time of your life. But you also came back to the UK and got back into sports. And of course, you know, you ended up winning a javelin gold medal in this year's Tokyo Paralympic Games. But what made you sort of want to come back, and what got you back into competing as an athlete, but this time for the Paralympic Games?
Yeah, I mean, I had an absolute blast traveling with Martina. You know, we both had this kind of ambition to travel, and she was just the perfect partner for me to do that with, and we share some incredible memories. When I was in Tasmania, we travelled in New Zealand, Australia, Southeast Asia, but we were in Tasmania at this point towards the end of our trip, and I was working in sort of backpackers jobs. We were very, very much working with heavy machinery, and there's a few times where I had a few near misses with forklift trucks. Because of my eyesight, you know, I just didn't see them coming in from the side. And I thought, wow, this is stupid. I need to do something about this. Maybe traveling, I need to knock it on the head for at the moment. And I found out about the Hereford National College for the Blind in Hereford. And I phoned them up, and they said that they've got a place for me to take to enroll in a sports massage therapy course. And so we decided from then to move from Tasmania to Hereford. Never been to Hereford before in my life. And so I wasn't sure what to expect. And I couldn't have wished for a nicer place to come and live. It's just brilliant. Everyone's, you know, so supportive of what I'm doing. And there's this real sense of community, which is fantastic. So, getting back onto the point of how I discovered javelin throwing again. Well, basically, I got in touch with a few friends that I'd known before in athletics. And they suggested, why not, you know, I try for para sport. So I got in touch with British Athletics, and they steered me into the right direction to go and have a national classification. So to compete in para sport, you need to be classified into a certain category depending on your impairment. And I was classified as F13 nationally, which was very interesting. It was lots of emotions going around at the same time because, you know, for me, my eyesight had always been something that had been holding me back, and now all of a sudden I was hoping that my eyesight was as bad as they'd said, so I can get into para athletics. So I think para sport is like an incredible thing, that it can make you have an absolute 180 in terms of your opinion of what your disability is doing to you. And for me, it's now like paving my pathway, you know, into the future. And I'm really excited on the journey that I'm going on now.
And Dan, what is the track that takes you back to those days travelling around New Zealand and other parts of the world? And what sort of memories come back to you when you hear it?
Yeah, so this song is Conrad by Ben Howard. Ben Howard comes from Cornwall, and he's just a brilliant artist. And this song is a song that brings me back to a special place where me and my fiance Martina, we used to go in Sardinia, a place called Acqua Dolce. And it's like a plateau of rock just below a cliff. And it's just beautiful there. Like the Sardinian sun warms up the rocks next to the ocean, crystal clear ocean around. And we remember playing this song on our speaker whilst we were there. In our honeymoon period of when we first met. And it's a beautiful song.
Conrad by Ben Howard there. And I think the name of your camper van too, Dan.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I forgot to mention. Yeah, so when we got to New Zealand, we named our camper van after that song, Conrad.
Well, now we come to your final track, Dan, the one that you would like to maybe pass on that might give people hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
This track is Gravity, and it's a live version by John Mayer, and it's live in Los Angeles from the album Where the Light Is. It's a significant song for me because it kind of hits home on a few points. And there is a very good quote that I found off Wikipedia that kind of sums it up for me about the lyrics in the song. So shall I read a quote?
Yeah, please do, yeah.
So I'm reading it as we speak, and as you know, my eyes aren't very good, so I might be slow at reading. So this is quoted from this guy. So he says, gravity seems to express people's tendencies to self-destruct. Just like we can't fight gravity, we can't seem to fight this tendency to destroy the things we cherish in our lives, no matter what we do. And he quotes from the song, I'll never know what makes this man with all the love that his heart can stand, dream of ways to throw it all away. And end of quote. Wow. It can also describe how, like the force of gravity, the circumstances of life that are out of our control are the ones we get so fed up fighting with and ultimately lead us to losing hope. Keep me where the light is a plea for any reprieve from his misery. So that's kind of a really powerful quote of a summary of the song, because I think many times for me, in my early teens, coming to terms with the fact that I was going to go blind, it's an inevitable thing. And you find yourself trying to fight this inevitable thing. So, and you get so worn out trying to think how your life could be different without this condition. But as soon as you come to terms with it, you are truly free. And I think this is what kind of keeps me in the light and, has made me have the successes in my life and been able to do the things I want to do, because I'm not focused on the negatives that my eyesight and my eye condition brings.
Wow, what a lovely thought to end on. And thank you so much indeed, Dan Pembroke, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
It's been a pleasure.
I got dreams too. Remember, yeah. I got dreams to remember.